Okay, we're on Daf Zayin Amid Aleph, towards the bottom, and we will, Mirtz Hashem, finish the parak shortly. The Mishnah said, Sanhedrin Noheges, the laws of the Sanhedrin apply outside of Eretz Yisrael as well. Okay, now remember, only applies when there's a Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael. Will it apply outside of Eretz Yisrael? Meaning you can have a court of 23 outside of Eretz Yisrael. All 23 rabbis got their smicha inside Eretz Yisrael, and now they have permission to deal with capital cases outside Eretz Yisrael. Gemara now wants to know the source for that. Minah Hanimili. From where do we derive this, that we could have a Sanhedrin ruling outside of Eretz Yisrael? The Tanur Rabbanan, our rabbis taught in a brisa of the following statement. It says in Sefer Bamidbar, V'hoyu eila lachem, and these will be for you, these will be what? L'chukas mishpat, for laws of judgment, l'doro seichem, for your generations. Now the most important part of the pasuk is not the Gemara. In all of your dwelling places. Gemara left out that part. And now what was going on? The pasuk before was talking about adjudicating murder cases. The pasuk before was talking about you got to adjudicate murder cases. So it says that this law of adjudicating murder cases should be your laws for all generations in all your dwelling places. So all your dwelling places, Lamadnu, that we learn, L'Sanhedrin Shenoheges Be'eretz U'Bechutz Aretz, that the laws of the Sanhedrin are in effect both in Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael in all your dwelling places. Aye, if that's the case, but there's still one more word in the Pasuk that we haven't explained. Im Kain, if so, if we know they're in all the places, Ma Talmud Lomar Bish Arecha, what's the word there that says in your gates, in all of your gates, have to teach? If it already says in all your dwelling places, why do I need in all your gates? Let's see the Pasuk. Shoftim v'shot, it's a different Pasuk really. Shoftim v'shotrin titin l'chol, you should have judges and officers, b'chol sharecha, in all your gates, where Hashem's going to give you, etc., etc. So why do we need to know that you put them in all your gates? We already know you have them in wherever you live. The answer is, b'sharecha, it's froze, oh no, b'sharecha, in all your gates, it's referring to in the Holy Land, which means, atamoshiv bote didin b'chol pelech, u'b'chol ir v'ir. In Eretz Yisrael, remember, Shoftim is talking about in Eretz Yisrael, you have courts in each and every province, every pelech, and in every city. So in other words, you'd have, what would be the example here? You'd have, let's say, federal and district courts, wherever. In other words, you'd have a court in the, for the Shevet, let's say, right? And then in every city, there'd be more localized courts. So there has to be a greater availability of courts. That's Ubisharecha.
Of 23?
Yes, of 23, for murder. Yeah. Ubachuslaretz, but outside of Israel, Atamoshe b'chol pelech u'pelech. You have to put in every province, or you can't, V'i Atamoshe b'chol ir v'ir, but not in each and every city. In other words, the word sha'ar, gate, in the context of this pasuk, means a city. So when the Torah says bisharecha, in your cities, it means in the cities of Eretz Yisrael, to the exclusion of the cities outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, we can't say that no courts are required in the diaspora, because how would he explain the other pasuk in all your dwelling places, right? So courts are required there, but only in each province, but not in each city. So you have to have, wherever you live, so you've got to have courts. Okay, but you don't have to have an abundance of courts. In Eretz Yisrael, where it's Bisharecha, each and every city. Now, the
cities in diaspora did not have gates?
When it means your gates, it didn't have to say in your gates. Remember, Shoftim v'Shotrim speaking in Eretz Yisrael. So why do you have to say in your gates? If we already know you have to have courts. So it's saying in your gates means even in your cities. That pasuk is not said by Chutz La'aretz. So there's no pasuk for that. Question is, why is this law, which discusses courts and seemingly belongs in Tractate Sanhedrin, over here in Makkos, which is towards the laws of witness? It has nothing to do with Makkos. In view of the Gemara's explanation of the previous two sections of the Mishnah, maybe that its purpose is to elucidate those sections. That is, since the system of courts applies both inside and outside the Holy Land, we understand that the Mishnah's first ruling refers to a court within Israel, while the second refers to outside. Remember we said, if the guys were found, they escaped, do we re-adjudicate the case? And we gave an answer in the Gemara, not from the Gemara, from the Mishnah wouldn't have known it. The Gemara depends, was the court case first adjudicated in Eretz Yisrael, or was first adjudicated outside of Eretz Yisrael? And when it's outside and goes back in, then we'd re-adjudicate it. So now we got to know, well, how do we know that we need to have courts outside of Eretz Yisrael at all, that the whole case comes into play? So that's why we're mentioning that idea. Okay, so we have courts outside of Eretz Yisrael, but of a more broad basis and for every province, but not for every city. The next statement was, how often should a Sanhedrin kill people? So the Mishnah started off, Sanhedrin Aregas, remember, Sanhedrin that executes once in every 7 years is a destroyer court. Yeah. Then came along, who was that, Rabbi Lozer? I'm trying to remember now. The name of the person. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah says once every 70 years. But he didn't finish off what he meant. What does he mean once every 70 years? So the Gemara is going to express this question. Iboilaho, the Gemara had a shaila when Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah gave a dissenting opinion, but he said once in every 70 years. What did he mean? Did he mean Achas l'shivim shana nikreis chablonis? Once in every 70 years is called a destroyer court, and therefore even once in every 70 years is too much. Remember, the first opinion said once every 7 years is too much. Rabbi said, no, once every 7 years is not too much. That for sure is too much. But even what? Well, even once in 70 years is too much. Did he mean that? Or Odilma Orach Arahi. Or maybe he said once in 70 years, that's just about right. In other words, so it's much more than seven, but once you're up to 70, then that's okay. That's what we're saying. It could be understood in two ways. We understood as an emendation of the Tanakhama statement that a certain which executes once in 7 years is called a destroyer. To this, our laws of Messiah responds the correct number is 70 and not seven. It can also be understood as a statement by itself. Once in 7 years is an acceptable amount of executions. Okay, so
once in 70 years could be the eighth year. Is that acceptable?
No, once in every 70 years is acceptable.
Once every 70
is acceptable, as opposed to the first shot, once in every 70 is even too much.
Yeah.
Gemara's not sure what he meant, because it was an open-ended statement. Answer, Teiku, we don't going to know. There's no one to ask, and we have to wait for Eliyahu HaNavi to tell us. Doesn't matter. We don't hold like him anyway. We hold like the first opinion once every 7 years is a murderer's court, so then he becomes a moot point, so we don't need to know. Okay. That's a good question, Shelley. I don't know the answer. Because for sure it's hard to say that because, you know, every city would be different. What let's say New York versus Akron, Ohio.
It's 7 years for all of them, so it doesn't matter.
So you understand? It'd be hard to say. To me, it would seem for the entire country.
Absolutely.
But that's a good question. It's a good question. It's not. I never thought of that question. Maybe let me check in my commentaries in the back. No, Shelley's saying, okay, you have, let's say, one court for every shevet, and then a chveis, I don't know, 10, 15 little city courts, whatever. So we're going to look at all those courts that each one can have one every 70 years or 7 years, whatever. Or it's the whole Eretz Yisrael. It would be hard to say it's talking about every city because by population should really mean a different number. Yeah. You expect more people in New York to get killed than in Akron, Ohio.
Yes.
Because there's like, whatever, 9 million people in New York. I don't know what it is. So obviously, it's going to be more people can get killed, right? So that it would make, if you're giving a standardized number, it would probably be for all of Eretz Yisrael, would seem to make sense. But let me, send me that in the email to check that. So I'll look in the back. We'll see. Maybe that's another discussion. Okay, then we had Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva Omrim Ilu Hayinu. If we were in the Senate, no one would ever be executed because of the way we would cross-examine the witnesses. So Gemara says, well, exactly, tell me, how are you going to cross-examine? What do you mean? Eventually, what do you have two witnesses that can give you the right answers? You could try a Mueller probe for 2 years, but still you found nothing. So no matter how much you're going to cross-examine, if there's nothing, there's nothing. And if the witnesses really saw it, I mean, if they really saw it, then what are you going to do? And if they've got good memories, what are you going to do? So it must be a kind of a question that the witnesses can't answer. So that's Gemara asks, hey, Chehava Avdi, so what would they have done? And therefore, they're preventing executions. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, Amar Tavayo, those two answer. They ask the following question. Ra'isam Trefa Harag, Sholem Harag. Did you see if they killed a person who's a trefa, meaning he's suffering from one of the 18 specific defects that a person will not live out the year? If we know that a person is terminally ill, he will not live out the year. If you kill him, it's not a nice thing to do, but it's not punishable by execution, by capital punishment. So they ask the witnesses, well, did you see if the victim was a trefa or not? Now, there's no way they could know that, right? Such a person, okay, thus, Rabbi Tarfon would have asked the witness if they had examined the corpse after the murder to see if it had one of those defects. Were they coroners, right? If you're not a coroner, how are you going to know? Now, and most of these are internal defects, okay? So, therefore, that's what we'd ask them. Do you know if he killed a healthy person or a trefa? I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But the Gemara says, wait a minute. Amar Ravashi, Ravashi added, and im tim tzolim er shalim. Let's go further. Let's say they're able to say, yeah, he was whole. We examined it, and he didn't have anything wrong. They still could have stumped him, even if they examined it. Yeah, we don't find any defects. They'll say, well, wait a minute. There's one more question we're going to get you on. Dilma b'makom sayif nekev hava. Let's say the guy stabbed him to death, right? So maybe he stabbed him where the hole was already. Let's say he had a hole in his lung. So he's going to die within a year. If you have a hole in your lung, you're not living the year out. So are you sure that the stab wound didn't wound the hole? Okay, now how are you going to know that? Now, although it's possible the victim had such a fatal defect, the vast majority of people are not afflicted with such life-threatening conditions. The question therefore arises, why, according to Rav Tarfon and Rav Akiva, the court would not apply the principle of zeal busser ruba? We have a rule, we follow the majority. I'll give you an example of that rule. A person kills his father. Okay, I have a great way to get him off the hook. Can you positively prove, now in the ties of the Gemara, that that man was your father? Now, you kill your mother, we could have proof of that, because the baby came out of the mother. But the father, but pre-DNA testing. Okay? So how are you going to raise your father? So guess what? There's something called a rove. And we say, well, if a woman is married to a man, even if she was not loyal to her husband, but the majority of her relations were with his father. Rove bi'ilo sachar ba'al. So you go with the majority. Most fathers, except maybe in certain ethnic parts of the world, most husbands are the fathers of their children. Okay, that's a rove. I mean, that could be pretty safe, say, in right majority. So we go with the rove. That's what we say. We go with the rove. Most fathers are your father. All right, whether this or not, doesn't matter. Rove is the way you paskin, just like in many areas, you go with the rove. So let's say the same thing over here. Rove people are healthy. They're not going to die out in the year. Why don't we go with that rule? And that gets us out of the question at all. Right? To establish the legal sum, there was no hole where the blade entered and therefore sentenced the murderer to death. Okay. Rabbeinu Tam explains that the court would in fact execute a murder on the basis of this rule if they had not asked the witnesses anything about the victim's treifas. If you don't ask, then we just assume there's a rove, there's a majority, and that he was a healthy guy. However, once they question the witness, and the witnesses reply that they do not know the victim's status, their testimony is invalid, since this question is an integral part of their testimony. And that can, you understand that, because what if a Beis Din, when they're interrogating the witnesses, maybe there was one question that could have showed they contradicted, and they didn't ask the question. For whatever, they forgot to ask the question. Then they'll kill the guy, even though they forgot to ask that question. Tosafot, however, object to the logic of this explanation. If they argue the defendant could have been executed, even though the witnesses were not questioned about the victim's treifa status, how could the witnesses reply they do not know anything about the status disqualify their state testimony? Rather, Tosafot explained the Gemara to mean that Rabbi Tam and Rabbi Akiva would have questioned the witnesses so relentlessly and about such obscure details that eventually the witnesses would have contradicted each other on some point, and this would have disqualified their testimony. According to this explanation, the question about the victim's treifas is merely an example of the niggling questions to which these sages would have subjected the witnesses in order to elicit a contradiction. So it's not necessarily this question, you know. Oh, but even then, that would be, one could say, yeah, I knew he was a treifa, or I said, no, I didn't know he was a treifa, or whatever. So but that's an example of that. Okay, so that's how they would interrogate the witnesses in those ways. Yeah?
Just a question about this whole treifa thing. It's like, how do you match this up? Because let's say the guy's a treifa and he's going to die in a year. How is that any different than a guy who's like 119 years old and like, you know, 2 months, in 10 months he's going to die anyways?
Because he could still live more than a year. That's all. He could still. You know, and I don't think there's anybody ever went that far. Yeah. I don't think that ever was a case. I don't think anybody's made it into the 110s. Historically, I just don't. Yeah. Don't. No, so it's not
like,
an issue.
Just regarding with the amount of time left, we say like, oh, 1 year, or like 1 day is like so valuable for a human being to live.
It doesn't matter. There's halachas, and then there's hashkafa. Uh-huh. Yes, every moment is important, but what is that, when it becomes a capital crime? Just like any, there's so many conditions to prosecute a capital crime. This is one more condition. Mm-hmm. The condition is, did you kill a person who was normally going to live? Mm-hmm. Right? And we don't kill you for cutting a life short when it was going to be cut short anyway. That's there's, you know, psukim that tell us that. So that's rule from that. What? Go ahead. Well, that was the other rabbi said, you're going to increase the murderers. That was the statement that was said right after it. You think you're going to cut down who gets killed, and that way you're going to increase the murders. That was that statement. Shimon Lil says, you're going to increase people who are going to get killed right there. Right? Afe Marvin Shokin Dom Yisrael. Right? So you're going to cause more people to get killed. Right? And so that was the disagreement over there on that point. It's interesting. We don't have any, there's no way to rule on that. Okay, where am I now? Go ahead.
And just like when we talk about end of life scenarios, and we say if you hasten the end of life, you're a murderer.
But that cannot be convicted by a Jewish court.
But we still call it a murderer.
Oh, yeah. And Hashem will deal with you accordingly. We'll deal with you accordingly. A Jewish court cannot convict you of murder. They can't execute you. Just like, yeah, what if you forgot to warn him? Can we execute him? No. Right? I'm just saying, there's certain things. You have to remember, Hashem always will deal with this. It is totally wrong. It's not like, oh, it's not as bad. Mm-hmm. You know, no, it could very well be. It's just that either death is not the atonement for that. That's all. It's totally prohibited. Just like anything else, are you allowed to eat a half a kazayas of treif? You allowed to eat a half a kazayas of treif? No. What happens if you eat a half a kazayas of treif? Nothing. But you can't. You still have a half a kazayas of treif in your system that's going to affect you. But there's a certain amount. We have certain rules.
On this strict, very strict interpretation, 70 years is probably more likely than 7 because, you know. Well, I mean.
Well, it depends.
It's almost impossible to. To execute
the... I guess it depends. You know, this is what you call, in Jewish law, that's called, this is actually a liberal and conservative court.
Yeah.
You'd say, Rabbi Akiva, it's interesting, if you really think about his life, I mean, I don't want to equate him with liberals of today. Like, I don't mean any of that. But I'm saying there is a room within the framework of Jewish life and law of being a conservative and a liberal, insofar as, you know, the liberal, you know, you're a judge, you could take a liberal view of, well, we're going to try really hard to get these guys off defending these guys, and a more conservative view, listen, only so many questions you're required to ask. You don't have to go nuts and ask so many questions. So, and Rabbi Akiva was a shtickle liberal. You know, remember, he was the one who backed Bar Kokhba. That was kind of a liberal view. And you see what happened. But anyway, but he was a liberal type of person.
Just so him? Or all the sages who backed Bar Kokhba?
I don't know if all of them. But anyway. So that's that. Okay, yeah, last question. You said... Okay, fine. So that was said, okay, that's murder. But wait a minute, there's other kinds of capital cases. Immorality. Ah, so what kind of questions would you ask to get the... I mean, there's many ways to die in Judaism. Right? So, okay, you took care of murder. According to Rabbi Akiva, he feels with murder, well, there's no way you can know for sure that you killed a person who's going to live. Okay, what about adultery? Now, that there's no such halacha. Let's say two terminally ill people decide to have an immoral relationship, I don't believe there's halacha, they get off the hook. Because they didn't kill anybody, they did an aver today, and for this aver today, you get killed. So, what about bibalas erva? Let's say you have an adulterous case, hey chavavdi, what kind of questions would they ask to get the guy off the hook?
Isn't this what we had talked about last week?
Yes, I think so. Yes, so Abai Varav, attorney of Abai Varav, will explain what Rabbi Akiva must have asked. Re'isim, did you see the very intimate details? Kimichol bashfo feres, like an applicator inserted inside of a tube of eyeshadow, where you've got a tube and the applicator. Did you actually see that? Now, the witnesses would almost certainly have no answer to that. You can't see that, so that would get them off. Now, it's interesting. There are many other capital offenses, such as idolatry and disgrace of the Shabbos. What about that? How are they going to get off? So Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva were perhaps less concerned about those offenses because they were relatively rare. Wow. It was therefore unlikely that anyone would be executed for them anyway. That's what Tosfos says. Alternatively, there are other strategies similar to the ones outlined for murder for finding disqualification by which to acquit the defendant. See Tosfos there. Okay, so there are questions they could ask. Aye, what about the rabbis who disagree with Rabbi Akiva? Okay, now there's Tanaim who disagreed with Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. They would impose the death penalty, remember? Rabban and Heichi Dainu, so how are they going to judge? How are they going to get around to ask the questions? They're asking on idolatry, because that one is really hard to see. Now, it's interesting, what happened to the first case of murder? Gemara's only asking, remember, Rabbi Akiva, they're the liberals. So what about mainstream? The conservatives, they would execute. Remember, beginning we said, well, how often? Remember, we said, how often do you execute as a murderous court? The Tanakhama assumes we do, in the course of time, kill people once in a while. Let's say once every 70 years. So that was the Tanakhama. He says, never! We'd never kill them. So now we got to go back to the opinion at least once. It says, so how would we ever kill them? Right, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Uz, whatever Rabbi Tarfon, they'd have questions they couldn't answer. So how does the conservative court respond to these things? So Gemara only asked adultery. Commentators went, why didn't the Gemara say, what about murder? How are they going to ask questions to get them to kill by murder? So the commentary questions, the Gemara questions how these sages would execute an adulterer, but not on how they would execute a murderer. Why don't the Gemara ask, what would they ask them? This is because they may hold, in contrast to Rabbi Tarfon and Akiva, that in case of murder, we rely on all cases with the majority. They would say we go with the majority. Remember, we asked that Kasha and Rabbi Akiva, so we gave an answer, but they maybe don't hold to the answer.
Majority of what?
Majority of people that you kill are not going to die. Remember, they Rabbi Kiva would say, "You are you sure this person was healthy or not?" Well, you're not sure, so he's off the hook, right? So we asked the question, "What about the rove?" Right? To which we gave an answer, but if you disagree with the answer, so they're going to hold most people are healthy, and that's how they would execute them, and that would be the simple way of answering the question. But with adultery, we don't have that answer. So what are they going to say? That they will execute adulterers, and so you can't exactly see it as Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon suggested. So they're going to hold Kishmuel. They're going to like Shmuel. The Omar Shmuel. Shmuel says to execute Menafanim, Menoafim, adulterers, you only need Kishiyiru Kemenoafim, when they appear to be acting like adulterers. In other words, if you see the two of them, they don't have clothes on, and the man is right on top of the woman, and they're making all kinds of sounds and whatever, so it looks like, you know, and that is enough. That's enough, because if God wanted you to put in the Torah for you to convict them, there's got to be a way to prove it. And therefore, that's good enough. Rabbi Akiva says, no, that is not enough. And we rule like Shmuel in that case. We rule like the Tanakhama, and that's all you need to know. Oh, what?
If God put the law in the Torah, then it has to be executable?
Well, at least this one we hold like Shmuel. That's true. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva would have said, well, we wouldn't have got anybody killed. They just machlokas. It's machlokas. Sometimes Hashem says the laws and if they can happen or not. Okay, we finished. I don't know, Kesa Adim. We've still got another 5 minutes. So let's just start the Mishnah of the second parak. So we're finished, as it were, with Adim Zomimim. Now we're moving on to the next case of, since we mentioned in the first Mishnah, one of the case of Adim Zomim who falsely testified that a person killed unintentionally and has to go to the city of refuge. And what do we do with Adim Zomim? We lash them. So now we're going to move on to the topic of city of refuge, killing unintentionally. What is that? That's the second chapter. Not until the third and final chapter do we do anything about lashes, which is the name of the Masechta. So we're just going to give you the general rule over here. It's going to be a million questions, and the Gemara will address them. Okay, that's what I already explained. Good. Okay, Elu Heda Golim. These are the people who get exiled to a city of refuge. Number one, first rule, Hahoireg Nefesh Bishkaga. Your person has to kill inadvertently. Now, that is explicitly said in the Torah. Explicitly, it says, Livnei Yisrael, well, it's, yeah, V'lager V'latosha V'sochem Tia Sheish Haras Elevet. There should be six cities of refuge. Lanu Shama, to run there, Kol Make Nefesh, anyone who kills somebody, Bishkaga, unintentionally. So clearly the Torah says, it has to be, now we have to define what that is. But it is for sure, you have to have that first rule. So now, it's already been stated, so what's the Mishnah adding for us? The Mishnah's point here is that one is liable to exile only in a standard case of shkaga, inadvertence. In other words, he acted with some degree of negligence, but not gross negligence. Oh, see, that's the FBI. You have to know exactly what it is. If he was not negligent at all, he remains free. And if he was grossly negligent, exile does not suffice to atone for him, but he doesn't get murdered either. He doesn't get executed. We'll see. Remember I said yesterday, there is clear mazid. Mazid, that means you intended to kill him, you wanted to kill him, that we kill the guy. Then there's the other extreme, ones, a total accident. It was like mabish, beyond your control, you had nothing to do with it. You know, you're driving the car and the brakes failed. And it's a brand new car. It wasn't like a 50-year-old car and you were never going to get a check. Brand new car out of the lot, the brakes failed, you kill the guy. Well, that's an ones. Okay. Then we have what's called a shogeg. There's some degree of negligence. And then we have karov lemazid, gross negligence. Now that means your sin is so bad that going to sin of exile will not atone for you, but not bad enough that you get killed for it. This will all be discussed, but that's the idea over here. Now, What is the classic show gig that you will go to exile, meaning there was a little bit of negligence, but not a ton? Hoya ma'agel b'magel. The guy is pushing a roller to plaster a roof. In the olden days of the Gemara, the roofs were flat, not slanted. I don't know why. To speak to the builders. Okay? So now, they were flat. The problem is, if it rains, it all sits on there. So what did they have to do? They put a little plaster to waterproof it, and they would plaster with a slight incline so that the rain would come off. So now the guy's got a roller, and he's rolling it, we'll see in a minute, down the incline. So he's rolling it, and then v'nafla alav, and the thing fell out of his hand, the rolling pin, a heavy pin, Vargan kills the guy. So he's rolling it. He's lowering down a big barrel of wine, whatever the rope. Vinafla alav. And it fell on a bystander. It slipped out of his hands and killed the guy. He's climbing down a ladder. Vinafla alav. And he fell off the ladder and his weight killed the guy. Those three cases, Hare Zag Goyla. He goes into exile. We'll see the common denominator in a minute. But the opposite scenario, same cases, but the opposite. What if he was pulling, drawing the roller upwards? He's going up the incline. Instead of pushing down, he's pushing up. And as he's pushing up, pulling up, enough of, then it slipped out of his hand and kills a bystander. Or he's raising a barrel from bottom to up. And then what happened? And then the rope slipped and kills the person. Okay, broke, not slipped. Gemara is going to discuss commentaries, ask why the Mishnah started with it slipping and then it broke. We'll deal with that later. But that, okay? And then it falls on Savihar and kills him. And now on the top of the next page, just to finish it up, Hoya Oyla B'Sum, when he's climbing up a ladder, V'Nafalav, and then he slipped and fell down and killed somebody, Hareza Eina Goyla, he does not go into exile. Okay? What's the common denominator between the first three cases, and what's the common denominator between the second three cases? One's going up, one's going down. Zaklal, this is the rule. Call Shabaderech Ridaso. If that happens as you inadvertently while you're going down, Goyla, you get exiled. Ushalo Baderech Ridaso. What happened? The whole thing just. Okay. Vachol Shalo Baderech Ridaso ain't a Goyla. And whatever is in a not downward but upward does not go into exile. What do you think the first question of the Gemara is going to be? What's the difference? Yeah. That's going to be tomorrow's question. Okie dokie.